always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this nervous, we'll call it a nervy Thursday evening by Edwin Garcia of Silver Screen and Roll. Edwin, how you holding up, bud?
You know, I'm hanging in there. Sun still rose today, believe it or not. And I'm trying to remind people that. And as the Hawks have showed us, it's just basketball. You know, it's just basketball.
I thought it was really cool that the Hawks just like started their vacation for everybody to watch. It was just nuts. They were just like, they hit the all-inclusive bar. They were just, you know, living it up at the at halftime of their own game. It was crazy. Today on the show, the reason that we are a little bit nervy and the reason I'm like hesitant to even like get this conversation started, and I'm kind of filibustering and I can feel my desire to continue filibustering, is because the Lakers feel like they're on the verge of some pretty bad history. So we're going to talk about wrong in game five. We're going to talk about how those things that went wrong can be avoided here as they prepare for game six in Houston. We're going to talk about our levels of you know, where we sit on the panic meter and how nervous we actually should be given the context of everything going on here. And then we'll just kind of discuss over the course of this thing how we see this playing out and why. So should be a fun, nervy conversation that Edwin and I are about to have. A reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show. Turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the podcast in the morning via podcast form, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care where you get them. A reminder also that this show is brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and you can get $50 worth of free Prize Picks lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup of your own. All right, so we'll go start this thing off. Also, a quick heads up too. I feel like my feed here is kind of jumpy, kind of going in and out. We had a crazy storm that ripped through the city that I live in, and the internet basically ever since has been super dodgy. I've turned off the TV that sits over there. I've turned off TweetDeck. I've turned off Slack. Everything. I am just focused on Edwin. Edwin, I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. Normally I have other outlets for what's going on in my brain. But if this gets jumpy or if I drop out, that's why. It's because of the torrential downpour that we had yesterday and the one that we're preparing for tomorrow. All right. So Edwin, let's just rip the Band-Aid and let everybody bleed. According to Raj, where do you sit on the panic meter right now? Is this a Buzz Lightyear and Woody situation where, you know, Buzz says this is no time to panic and Woody replies this is the perfect time to panic? Yeah. Like, where do you sit on the panic meter as the Lakers get ready for tomorrow's game six?
We are right in between the moment when Buzz says that and Woody responds. That's exactly where we sit, because we're almost there. We're almost there.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's 3-2. And hey, if you win game six, we'll just be like, that got a little too dicey for what I liked. If they lose game six, then we are at the perfect time to panic. There is no more. We are now at a 50-50 game. It's a game seven. You know how that's going to be. You start looking at that 100, the graphic's going to come up. 160 teams have finished this job, you know, and that's when it is. But we are right in between where it's more than fair to ask the question, and it's okay to not be panicking yet. But we're only one. By this time tomorrow, we're going to know, you know, if someone's going to say it because, you know, the Rockets are up 12 and it's, you know, midway through the second quarter. And we're like, oh, no, this is rough. I'll tell you one thing. I know where I don't want to be Sunday, and that's Crypto.com Arena. That's the last place I want to be on Sunday. If we're there, I'm not going to be feeling good, and I'm not going to be happy about the day that I am having. That's for sure.
It just dawned on me that, like, that is Braj's favorite place in the world, and he would totally rather not be there. Like, no. He does not at all want to be there on Sunday. That is amazing. Yeah, I think here's why I am concerned. It's not because I think the Rockets have figured anything out about the Lakers. It's not because I think that, like, Austin Reeves came back, that, like, the athleticism deficit just crept a little too far in the wrong direction. It's not because of, you know, the factors that most people would kind of point to. It's because the Lakers have back-to-back playoff games with one day of rest in between. And when you're the older team and one of those days features travel, by the way, like you got to go to two different time zones twice in 36 hours or whatever it is, really three times in 36 hours. That's where, you know, that's why I'm sitting here today saying, shit, history could actually happen here. Now, I'll also say this, though. There's plenty of reasons to believe that the Lakers can just kind of figure this out. And one thing that kind of struck me both watching it live and then during my rewatch was, I don't understand why LeBron spent so much time on the perimeter in that game. And you would think that when you get Austin Reeves back, that would make it that much easier for LeBron to, you know, take up a different spot on the court. So it was kind of an interesting, you know, approach to the game offensively. What have you seen? What did you see from, like, what went wrong? Aside from missing shots, which we will all grant that the Lakers missed a lot of makeable shots.
Sure.
Did you see anything process-wise that you would like to see tweaked?
The defense. I didn't like the doubling of Şengün. I felt, you know, Raj talked about this as well, and I felt like that was just a little bit too much. It's interesting seeing Redick's progression. When he first got the job, he was always adamant about, we don't double. I don't like to double. It gives the other team an advantage. We're switching everything. If you do your job, it's fine. And then he started doubling certain players like KD and Joker and saw them get frazzled. And he's like, hey, actually, the doubling kind of does work. And now I think we've gone too far the other way, where now it's become always double the star. And now since KD's gone, well, now that's Şengün. And seeing him getting doubled and just passing out of it and letting his guys knock down shots, I felt like I understand the idea of, hey, if that guy who's not a three-point shooter hits it, I'm okay with it. But there's a difference between, like, being okay with him taking the shot and giving him like 8 feet of space with no one around because you're so focused on doubling. And then he's hitting like practice shots. If you're going to give him those kind of shots, oh, they're going to make them because they're NBA players. You have to at least, you know, guard a little bit better. And I think if you just trust the guys and stay home, that would have been better. I think even switching things up, trying some zone, just mixing some things up, because they weren't exactly gangbusters either. They only scored 99 points, but they were finding success. Dorian Finney-Smith was hitting shots. I saw, you know, like a lot of just like offensive stuff where I'm like, we need to like kind of slow this down a little bit. And credit to the, you know, the Rockets, they did their job, but I think the defense was something, I think there's some things to clean up there. And I agree with you on LeBron. I think you want to put him more in the post. And again, two different strategies. Now, Ime went from like, I'm doubling LeBron, to actually prove to me you could score one-on-one. Like, and then I'll double. And that's meant more one-on-one play. LeBron has been able to take advantage. And the way they're guarding Luke Kennard is just, he can't breathe. They're defending him like Steph on those screens. And that flare screen is not available. We're not letting you get the ball. We're going to, and that's led to more turnovers and et cetera. So I think offensive execution is still required. I think the Lakers are still number one in turnovers, which is not what you want to be in the playoff series. And that hasn't been good. So I think those are a couple things besides a few rotation stuff. Hayes is another player who, man, he's been rough. Laravia played 9 minutes. There's been some questionable stuff up and down the roster, I think.
Yeah, let's start with the defense because on one hand, you say like defense, like they scored 99 points. You know, it'd be one thing if the Rockets scored 135 and the Lakers lost in a shootout.
Yep.
But where I will agree with you is that, like, in those moments where the Lakers needed to get a stop, I wasn't very confident, you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, I talked about this in yesterday's episode. Houston really tweaked their approach or really kind of turned their approach on its head by normally, and for the vast majority of the season, they have been crashing the boards like gangbusters.
Yeah.
They'd send people from both corners. They would have somebody down low, just kind of like taking up space and focus away from the defense so that those guys who were crashing from the corners would be that much more successful. But in this one, the Lakers limited the offensive rebounds. The Rockets basically decided, nope, we're going to just get everybody back. We're okay with the one possession, the one opportunity. And I think that approach from Houston really kind of made those 99 points kind of fool's goldish, right? Where if they do get a couple of extra, those extra boards and then miss some bunnies and stuff like that too. So the 99 points, it's easy to point to, but yeah, it, especially watching in the rewatch today, it was driving me nuts. It was just like, why are you doubling Şengün 30 feet from the basket? Like what? Like, you know, it's one thing. I've actually liked the way that the Lakers have doubled him, you know, when they have in this series so far, where basically if he's in the post and he turns to his left and he starts going to that right hand, they really sat on that right hand and forced him away from it. I'm fine with those kinds of doubles because the ball travels so little space that the defenders don't have to rotate that far. Yeah. But when you are asking the less athletic team to now cover cross-court skip passes because of the doubles that you're sending, that's where I think you're getting yourself into problems. And the other thing too is, you know, you mentioned how the Rockets, you know, they were so open that they were practice shots. This Rockets team gets to play super free. They don't have Kevin Durant anymore. If they lose, like worst case scenario is they lose this series and Ime Udoka gets fired, I don't think they would be all that sad about that. So it's like now that ball swings around and Jabari Smith and Tarzan and whoever, they're sitting there in the corner. They can shoot it super free and they had all the time in the world to shoot it. Those are things that the Lakers, I think, are going to have to take into account to a greater degree. The other thing too, like, I often say that, you know, the cliche is usually a stop isn't a stop until you get a rebound. But you also, like, the stop is kind of meaningless if you don't generate any kind of advantage out of that stop. And that was something that was driving me nuts, was like the Lakers were getting, like, they only gave up the 6 offensive rebounds. And yet they didn't get anything basically to you know, from those stops that they were actually generating. And it's really difficult to get back into a game or to flip the score when you're basically playing only in the half court on offense. So what do you think the Lakers can do here to get their transition offense back into becoming a bigger factor here?
Yeah, this kind of sounds mean to say, but I feel like your platform allows for this, so I'm going to go for it. The Lakers are winning the rebounding battle because the Rockets want them to. You know, like if the Rockets wanted to win, we saw that in the first couple of games. If the Rockets wanted to just say, hey, we're bigger, stronger, faster, we're going to annihilate you on the boards, they could do it. They're choosing not to because of what you said. What's LeBron number one in? Transition buckets. He wants to get out. He wants, despite his age, he wants to run less impact. Just be free, have the advantage, run. You can't spray and go like that because the Lakers can't really do that inbounding the ball necessarily. They do it off turnovers. They do it off of misses and that hit-ahead pass. They're taking that all away and say, hey, if we set our defense, we don't think you have the ball handlers to actually get into the actions you want to get into. So we're going to do that. So, hey, we're going to relinquish a couple boards. But so what? Like you said, okay, if I give you the ball and you can't score, okay, that's fine. We'll eventually outscore you, and that's how we're going to win the game. So I think it's a matter of having to find ways to turn the ball over. You have to find ways to get ahead, and that's going to be a struggle. I think Austin's going to help a lot with that because Austin wants to push the pace too, and Austin having the ball and starting the game, which I think he will start in game six, I think that's automatically going to give you – yeah, he's going to give you some more freedom, more mobility. He's going to push the pace. And then, like you said, I think getting LeBron just in motion. Also, like, he's getting the ball at the top of the key so much. I like to see him run some stampede cuts, get the ball downhill, use Ayton in those actions, and just get him in motion. Him pounding the ball and being up top and being asked to push the ball up and then set things up, it's just too slow and it's too much execution required. You need to get a little bit of havoc in there. And besides doing that off, you know, turnovers, of course, inbounding the ball and having Reeves kind of push the pace and then LeBron getting the ball as a secondary option, I think that's going to help a lot and free things up.
Yeah, the Rockets defense, once it is set, is just so daunting. You know, they are all crazy athletes. They are all 6'7", and then you have like Reed Shepherd, but they're all like, so you have Reed Shepherd and Şengün over there, and then everybody else is this like 6'6" to 6'9", 6'10", super athlete who gets into passing lanes. And, you know, when they're kind of given their assignments, and specifically as it pertains to Luke Kennard, everybody has basically gotten the assignment of like, we don't win if he goes off. Yeah. And one of the things that I was really kind of hoping for with Reeves coming back was that the Lakers could get back to running some sets for Kennard to, you know, all right, fine. You want to run, you want to stay attached to my hip. You want to focus as solely on me and shutting me down to the extent that you are. All right, fine. Let's do this thing then. Good luck running around four or five screens to, you know, to keep up with me. Meanwhile, while I'm doing that, maybe Austin and LeBron are running an actual, you know, pick and roll on the strong side. And imagine, like, I just thought that the Lakers offense, like it was funny because, you know, obviously like Krangis has been tracking, you know, organized offense to the extent that he has this year. Mm-hmm. And that term came up again in the chat last night while we were, you know, licking our wounds. And I don't think this is just a matter of like JJ isn't calling sets, the Lakers aren't doing this.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much that they were disorganized. It was more that they were like directionless. There was no purpose to what they were trying to do. What, like, they didn't understand which advantage to gain. And it was really kind of frustrating because at the beginning of the game, it looked like they did. Like, they were basically running, they would bring Rui up to set a screen on Austin to force Reed to guard Austin. And then when Reed was guarding Austin, you would bring Ayton up so that the pick and roll would be Austin and Ayton against Reed Shepherd and Alperen Şengün. And it's like, yes, like this is how you get you play those guys off of the court. Ime probably doesn't want to play those guys at the same time anyway. So if he's reminded rudely that that is not a great idea defensively, then eventually he might, you know, rethink it. And maybe you get a little bit less Reed Shepherd. And no, like, you know, they did it a little bit in the first quarter. It looked like it was something that they could maybe hunt for the rest of the game. And it just like they went completely away from it. And in its place was like, let's target Reed Shepherd with Rui Hachimura ISOs, and that feeds right into what Ime Udoka is doing. Like, this is the sacrificial lamb defense where you basically put Reed on a guy he has no hope of guarding one-on-one, and that convinces a team to run ISOs for that player. But when you're running ISOs for Rui Hachimura, that takes the ball out of LeBron's hands. It takes the ball out of Austin Reeves' hands. It takes the ball out of the pick and rolls that they could run together or with Ayton. And those are the things that Ime really wants to avoid. So I thought that the Lakers, by trying, like, by over focusing on Reed Shepherd and specifically focusing on him in the least effective ways that they possibly can, they really kind of played into Houston's, you know, game plan. And if you basically, like, what Gamble was, all right, we're going to get back on defense. We're going to take away their transition game. We're going to force them to execute in the half court. And then if you play into their game plan in the half court, now it's the worst of both worlds. So those are the things that, like, I am a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah. I'm certainly like not exactly looking ahead or looking forward to tomorrow's game. But I do think that there are some things process wise that Lakers fans can kind of latch onto and say they played the dumbest game that they could have possibly played yesterday. And it was still relatively close for most of it. And if you just play 25-30% smarter, not even like accounting for knocking down more shots, which you can't quite like count on the road, maybe sure. You can get some things going in that direction. So like sounds like you kind of share the same level of I dare to call it optimism, that like there are things that the Lakers could very clearly do better and smarter.
Yeah, I think there's also like too many stretches where the offense just kind of died. I think there was a stretch there, I think in the third quarter, where there's like 4 minutes where there was like no field goals from the Lakers. And it's like that kind of stuff was happening. But it's like, you know, we almost saw those graphics. You know, it's been 5 minutes since like the Lakers scored a field goal. And like you said, you got to be careful taking the bait that was set there for you. And the Lakers have been too much hunting Reed Shepard. It worked a lot, especially early on, but it was also multiple players doing it. And it was just kind of more, that felt more in the flow of the game. And when you get just like tunnel vision like that, the problem when you're hunting a player like that is the only good option is you have to win that battle because you're spamming it. And when you're not winning it, now it's a net negative all over. You know, we don't live in the universe where they actually were moving the ball around and they found a corner three for Luke, or, you know, a dunk off for like Ayton because that ended up available because, you know, Austin drove and all different types of actions. Now there's only one possibility. Rui, one-on-one, beats him off the dribble, pulls up, or just, you know, backs him down, which is that really Rui's game? Like backing a small guy down like that and then putting him in the paint? Not necessarily.
Right,
it's his game to come off one or two dribbles, but usually that's after a couple of movements and then you just find them weak side and then he hits that like midi that he's really good at. It's more in the flow of the game and you're like, oh, it's a really good mismatch. We can go to it like when it's available and when it makes sense. He's not LeBron where you can just say, hey, like destroy this guy, this mismatch is here. He's not that kind of player. He's not an ISO player that way, you know, on the ball like that heavy. And I think that you just get the law of diminishing returns was kind of happening with that kind of setup. I think that was a big mistake. I'm hoping, I'm assuming they're going to kind of go away from that. They can clean it up. And like you said, for all the errors and the poor offense and the too many turnovers, it was a two-possession game with 2 minutes to go. And it could have went the other way. So
if now, unfortunately, when you had the dumb play, the errors made it more than that later, like a couple plays later. But yeah, like that's the point, man. It's like
even that official call. If that call doesn't get overturned, right? That offensive foul thing, that would have been Lakers ball down five. And Easton would have been ejected from the game. Like these little things, again, every team can do this for every game, but except for the Hawks tonight. But other than that, you know, it's possible for one or two plays could have went the other way. And I think just like you said, starting us in the beginning, and now everyone, there is no one. I don't know what the Lakers are thinking. I don't like to do the psychological stuff. I don't know them to that level, but they know now that they are heading to the danger zone. It's 3-2 now. Everyone knows what's happening. It's 3-2. You got your guy back. Luka is nowhere near coming back for this series. Austin is back. This is a team. You got to win this game. You do not want to go to game 7. So I expect there to be the urgency and focus that kind of circumstance presents.
It's funny. I know you just said that you don't want to do the mental thing, but I'll do it for you.
Yeah, you can do it.
I don't have to interview him, so like, don't worry about it. But like, the thing here with the Lakers, and we've seen it from them all year, is the moment that they can take an opponent just slightly less seriously then maybe they should, the Lakers become the worst version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And the thing with the Lakers is, and this is something that we knew going into the season and was proven right over and over and over and over and over again, is that the Lakers, of all of like the decent to good teams, right, in the league, they have, I would argue, widest gap between their ceiling and their floor. And And when they don't take somebody seriously and when they dip back into those bad habits, they are a bad basketball team. They aren't a mediocre team. They aren't mid. They aren't meh. They are bad. And I think, you know, like they are still talented enough to dig themselves out of some holes and give themselves some chances that they would maybe not otherwise, or most teams might not have a chance in. But when the Lakers dip into those bad habits, it is ugly. And, you know, it was funny. I thought, and I think the Lakers probably felt this way too. I thought that all the Lakers needed was like one big run in yesterday's game, like one big punch to the gut that the Rockets say, all right, we're done here. I don't have to answer questions about where Kevin Durant is anymore. I don't have to like listen to Ime Udoka call me a bitch anymore. Like, I can just go on vacation and we can all just we can all move on. And it looked like in that first quarter, remember, the Lakers got up by like 8 to 10 points.
Yeah.
And there were like three possessions that two of them were wide open threes that they missed. And then there was a turnover in there as well, but it was a turnover in transition that I think Marcus Smart threw. And rather than being up 16 points or whatever it is, and Ime calling timeout and flipping off his team, instead, the Lakers miss a couple shots. They turn the ball over. The Rockets come back and they get down by like, you know, two or three possessions instead. And that to me, I thought was like the most important moment of the game. And then, you know, because from that point on, the Rockets kind of built out their lead. And then the Lakers were like 9 points down and then 4 points down and then 9 points down and then 4 points down. And then the game ended. And so like, I think here in this one, as you said, I think it was a great point to make. The Lakers can no longer take this team anything other than as serious as death, right? Like, they have to take them extremely seriously from here on out. And we'll see, you know, to what extent they actually, you know, dip into that. They typically go as LeBron goes, engagement level wise. And you and I both know that LeBron doesn't want this on his resume. He does
nobody wants this.
Rio.
Everyone has pride, like, right? And like, he's LeBron's like, you know, LeBron, right? And he knows he's going to be there. You know, even Redick, again, I don't want to put it on him, but like, he's this smart guy. You know, he got a lot of smoke last year when they lost, you know, in five. And, you know, rightfully so, right? A lot of mistakes that were happening. You know, you're going to get a lot of, you know, it's so funny. Before the series started, if you said, you know, Rockets 1-6 or Rockets 1-7, you'd probably be like, oh, the Lakers fought hard. And now it's like, it's considered like an awful scenario. But, you know, the context is now different, right? So, yeah, of course. And that's what I expect. I expect the Lakers to play like they don't want that to happen. And for the coaching to step up, for everything to kind of go up a level. I think the fact that Reeves started in the third quarter was a sign that they were taking the game seriously. Because typically, that's not what they would do. They would bench him and play him later and say, hey, you're just coming back from an injury. Yeah. You know, we're going to ease you in. They eased him into this game, right? He did not start. He came in around the 5-minute mark, and that was kind of how they treat players when they come off an injury. And after they saw how Luke was playing and how Reeves was playing, they said, hey, we're trying to win this game. Like, I'm sorry, but Reeves, you're starting now, and the minutes restriction is going to kind of go out of the garbage can at this point. We're going to just go with it. So, again, didn't get the result. But there's a lot to be positive about. I do hope that also LeBron gets a little bit sharper, less turnovers. He can play a little bit smarter. Yeah. I know he can play. We've seen him play some great games in this series, right? So I'm hoping the law of averages kind of flips. We just need a decent LeBron game, good Austin game, and just less turnovers, especially from Smart. Those were some really bad plays. Get him off ball a little bit so he's not in a position to make those turnovers. And if you clean those things up, you should be in a good position to win this still. Ayton's been great, right? Like, for all the stuff about Ayton, he has not been the problem, you know? Kind of a bad sign. He's one of the better players, but he's been doing his job. So that's been good.
I've wondered if Ayton's production is a matter of Houston giving him those opportunities, you know? Like, you consider the guys who are holding, you know, who have the ball in the pick and roll, and Houston is basically just, like, allowing the pocket pass, allowing Ayton to catch the ball at the free throw line or even a little bit, you know, closer in. They obviously don't want Ayton catching lobs, and they don't want the Lakers, you know, getting that easy of production from him. But I have found myself wondering if that was not, I don't think it's the sacrificial lamb stuff as you see with Reed Sheppard when he's out there on the court. But I do kind of wonder if it's like the, you know, the poison that you think you can keep down. The other thing that I wanted to talk about here, you know, as far as like, you know, things that maybe concern me here is the Rockets. I think the stat is that they're like 19 and 6 in games that Reed Sheppard starts. And he just unlocks so many things for them because turns out point guards are important. And
I still can't believe that
the Lakers have
that Ime just didn't know. I still can't believe Ime never figured that out. Like it was so funny. I was after game one, you know, he played okay. And I remember I was talking to Raj, you know, we're talking a lot about Raj today. And I told him when KD was back, I'm like, oh, Reed's out of the rotation. He looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, I'm like, I'm telling you, this is not my basketball brain. Yeah. This is like, I know what
that's what he's been doing all year.
And he went from literally 32 minutes to 11. And all that happened was KD came back. So in a weird way, obviously KD's a great player. He's a better player than any player on the Rockets. But for the team matchup and all that, it's kind of a blessing that he's out because now he's forced to play Reed. And guess what? They're playing better and winning games. Like, who would have thunk it, you know?
Well, the thing is, if I were a Rockets fan, I'd be sitting here saying, like, what would we be if you played KD and Reed together? What would we be if you played KD, Reed, and Şengün together? I know that that kind of flies in the face of the identity that teams, but like I that team terrifies me, you know, like having that much creation, that much finishing ability.
I think in game two, they had the best. It wasn't great because they lost, but they had the best plus minus on the floor for all Rockets lineups. And they played like only like 3 minutes, and other lineups had like 8 minutes, 9 minutes, 7 minutes. And I'm like, I don't know how he must have different data than the data that I have, because I'm like, even in the small sample size and the loss, that trio was one of the best, was the best three man lineup in a defeat. So it's like, I don't know, maybe you should play your best three players. I don't know. That's just what I'm thinking though, you know.
He's getting the data, but he's doing the Byron Scott thing to Mark Mattson, where Mattson would like put together the one sheet for him, and Byron would make him keep printing it out so he could say Kobe and shoot it into the trash. But yeah, it's an interesting thing though with Reed, because I think the Lakers, because Thompson can't shoot, they can kind of wall him off, right? I don't think it's a coincidence that Jabari Smith has had, you know, maybe the series of his life, because the Lakers have basically given him the 3-point shot and he just happens to be knocking him down. Even Tari Eason has gotten going because the Lakers have basically said, we aren't athletic enough to close all the way out to you and stay in front. So you guys are going to get the shots that you're going to get, but you can't do that to Reed Sheppard. He's a good shooter. And so Exactly. He's a good shooter. He's a good ball handler. He's going to attack closeouts. And when he gets by his first guy, he understands what to do at every level of the defense. The biggest shot, frankly, that was made in yesterday's game was that pull-up midi that he hit when he got by DeAndre Ayton. It was a big-time shot. I really believe in Reed Sheppard. I really think he's going to be really good. I think Ime completely fudged that one up. But what do you do, like, you know, now that Ime is forced to play Reed. Reed has played well. He's super confident out there. Historically, you know, this is the old man shakes fist at cloud, you know, basketball analyst, who's like, the way that you take him out of the series of the game is just to work him to death on defense. But is there anything outside of that that's maybe a little bit more analytical that you can think of to try to stem or try to contain Reed Sheppard? Because the Lakers have really struggled to do it.
I would love for the Lakers to use a little bit more size on him. I know Vandal's not a player that, you know, Redick is a fan of, and I understand the offensive limitations, but I would love especially if it's the second quarter and it's like a two possession game, why don't we just try a little bit of on ball Vando guarding him and try and disrupt him and say, hey, you're going to get a short shift. If you do something dumb, I'm going to take you out. But like, let me just try it. Let me just try to interrupt it. Cause I agree with you. I think there's too much hunting of him defensively and it hasn't worked. So I'm thinking I'm going on the attack on the defense. I'm putting some longer, you know, kind of guards up there, physical wings on him, try to disrupt him, get him out of his flow. You're going to tell Vandal to stay on him. You're an on-ball defender. You're going to reject any
screens. Yeah, I was going to say, like, face guard him. Don't let him catch. Force Amen to be the point guard, because that's not what Amen is best at.
Exactly. And I think doing some of that, and again, that's a look they haven't seen. We know that's something Vandal would love to do. He'd be like, great, that's I love attacking people and like putting them in the vault.
Finally!
Yeah, free him for a minute.
You know? Spotting up for the corner. Like,
I would love to see some of that. I think that would be a breath of fresh air. And again, especially this deep into it, there isn't too many more things you can do. You've done almost everything. We're six games deep into this, you know, matchup, and then including, you know, three regular season games. So I think that's a pitch that hasn't been used. That's a look that they haven't seen, and that could be something that could disrupt them. If, you know, I think that's a second quarter idea. If the game's still tight and you're like, hey, I want to kind of tip things my way. Beyond that, I just think it's about just, you got to try to avoid certain matchups. Like Smart on him is just horrible. That's not good.
Yeah.
But you, anytime you see that, you have to switch, because Smart just is getting destroyed on him. That's someone who I can't see. You know, Jake's been okay, but you know, he's had a really bad series. Maybe he's someone who can play like the baby Vando role if he's out there for a shift. But I think you have to keep giving him different looks. That's the way you can make him work. You just have him.
I would argue he's playing exactly like Vando offensively.
Like Laravia, you need to put him in water, man, because he's in rice, because he's just like, I don't know what it's been rough. And you know, playoffs are a different level. I understand that. And I'm not the biggest, you know, Laravia fan, but I mean, it's been, I mean, he played 9 minutes. That was, you know, for a player who's supposed to give you, telling. You know, 18 minutes or so, the team shorthanded and you're there, you know, Redick's still like, you know, looking away when the clock's going down. That's not good. So there also aren't that many options. So they have to be careful with what they decide and really like commit to it. And I would love to see Vando kind of get that assignment, even just for 2-4 minutes, just to see if it can kind of disrupt him a bit.
Yeah, like especially in a short burst earlier in the game, to where if it doesn't go well, like you have enough time to make up for it. I also like one thing that I've always liked, you know, so when a player is like Reed, who is shifty, he's quick, he's probably makes himself more athletic than he actually is because he can shoot. But he's still small, you know, at the end of the day, like that shot has to go up from basically like Vando's chest. And so like what I like seeing sometimes, and I love the idea here of just having Vando say sick him, you know, I would like to see Vando face guard, make it really difficult for Reed to catch it. If you commit an off ball foul, screw it. We're going to be in the bonus anyway, cause Alperin Şengün's flopping ass is flopping all over. But like, If you could basically like make it really difficult for him to catch the ball, but then really focus on containing. Yeah. You don't got to get up, like you don't got to steal the ball from him. You don't got to like you know knock him off a path or anything like that. Take a step back, give him just a little bit of room there so that you can still contain, but also still be able to rise up and block, you know, and contain the shot or affect the shot. And that was something that like I remember when Brandon Ingram like started to turn a corner in his career. He started learning to do that where he was so long, right? He looks like Enderman out there. And what basically they started doing, or what he started doing, was take a step back, keep guys in front, and then contest like crazy using that crazy ass wingspan that he had. And obviously Vando isn't quite as stretched out as Ingram is, but compared to Reed Shepard, he certainly is. And those are the kinds of things that like, again, be smart. Like I really frustrated me rewatching the game today, watching the game today, was because it just never felt like the Lakers were playing particularly smart. And I thought there was no greater example of that than in that second quarter when they were in that 8-10 points up range. And rather than just sticking with what built that lead in the first place, they started trying to throw haymakers. They dipped back into their bad habits, and then they stayed in those bad habits until it was like two plays too late to try to get all the way back into the game. And we'll see if the Lakers are able to turn that around. I also want to talk about the context of this, right? Where it's funny, if you would have told me going into the series that the Lakers would hold a 3-2 lead in this thing, I'd be like, they competed.
Yeah.
That's impressive. They were 9-1 underdogs in this thing. Like, what do we like? And yet here they sit 3-2 and I'm shitting bricks, you know, because it's, yeah. Like, I'm sitting here, I'm calling them dumb and I'm, you know, tearing apart like the ways that they played in that game. And it's just so funny that like the context can do these things to our, do you think like if they do lose in historic fashion, it would be embarrassing from that standpoint, but also from the same, you know, at the same time, this is not a team that was supposed to be in this spot in the first place. Now, Pete would maybe argue that they should have been in this spot because he thinks that Houston isn't very good. Raj was pretty confident going into the series, but those guys aside, I don't know what your prediction was going into it. Mine was Lakers in seven, basically because, you know, if they were going to win, there was a very narrow path for them to arrive there. What do you do with the context that we currently sit in, or the context leading up to the situation that we currently sit in now?
Yeah, well, we know that, you know, online there won't be any context. It'll just be like, LOL, you're the first team out of 161 teams to finally do this, and ha ha ha. But yeah, yeah. My prediction was Rockets in six. So if you told me when I made that prediction, actually it's Rockets in seven, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, again, they fought hard. And the reason why is because what other team is going to lose their two best players for the majority of a series and win, especially in a 4-5 matchup? It's not like, you know, no disrespect to like, you know, the old Clippers or something like that. But this was, you know, on paper, a quote unquote good team. They didn't actually lose as much as, you know, it feels like. And we understand the weaknesses they have, but the record's the record. They were right there. So it's a 4-5 matchup, and a 4-5 matchup where the four is losing the NBA's leading scorer and then their second best player who's going to be like, you know, a 30 million plus guy in like, you know, a couple weeks. You're not winning that series. That makes sense to me. So I feel like that's the context that I come with it. Yeah. No one's going to care. They're just going to laugh. There's going to be, the jokes are going to go off and all that. Which is why you want to avoid that scenario. But I think that it's important to remember that, hey, yeah, sure, they're missing KD, but we're missing Luka the entire time. And Austin played, well, if they lose, it'd be like two games in, you know, a quarter of, you know, he started in the third. So like, it's not like he was anywhere near. And also, by the way, coming off an injury that he's like on the cusp of barely getting off of, you know, it's a grade 2 oblique strain. It wasn't like a small thing. So I think that context is absolutely necessary. Now, again, no one's going to, you know, kind of validate that. But I think it's important to remember that what they're doing is incredible. And what they've done is incredible. You know, they had, you know, LeBron playing so great. Luke had some of his best, you know, playoff games of his career. Smart had that as well. And he's had a long career playing in a lot of playoff series. So they had a lot of great performances. And, you know, it's still going to be disappointing. You were up 3-0. So you definitely like messed up a bunch of times to kind of lose four straight. You know, it's kind of a weird sweep in that way. But yeah, I would hope that context doesn't get lost. And hey, there's a reason why like every NBA expert picked the Rockets, right? Like it wasn't like, it was the Lakers. You said they were like, what, 1-9 underdogs? So that clearly that was, it's funny for them to be like, I can't believe you lost. Like, yeah, everyone predicted that. Like literally everyone predicted that. Minus Pete and Roger. Everyone else, you know, been on the Rockets. Yeah, and this is why.
It's tough. Everything that you said is absolutely true. Objectively true. That they were heavy underdogs going into this thing. They are missing, or they started the series missing 60 points a game. And the guy whose back everybody's hopes sat on was LeBron James at 41 years old, right? Going up against this hyper-athletic, hyper-promising, you know, team that, yes, like they are missing guys too. But like at the end of the day, there's a reason that the odds were where they were. Yeah. And so like all of that context absolutely matters. I would also say that like this series is very like, it really kind of encapsulates the season that the Lakers have had, right down to the fact that they haven't had Luka, Austin and LeBron together at any point here. Right.
Like, about that. Yeah. Wow. That's
like, it's just like, it's, you know, and sometimes the basketball gods speak to you in a weird way. And I know that like when the Lakers were up 3-0, there was all this talk of like, oh, should they really let Rui walk? Should they, you know, bring most of the squad back and maybe have a couple of tweaks on the peripheries, and like maybe LeBron comes back and all this stuff too. There was a report recently that the Lakers really want to bring Luke Kennard back. Luke Kennard. It's Doncic, tough to have a Luka.
I can report that Doncic will be a Laker next summer. I think we can.
Whoa, breaking.
Whoa. Doncic will be a Laker. I feel really comfortable. Unless, you know, Nico gets that assistant GM job, then we have some problems.
That's true. Yeah. That would be the funniest outcome. That would be the
Can you imagine?
Thing.
They bring him back.
I live out.
They trade for AD, people, you know?
But like they, so, you know, I think the context absolutely matters under which this series was played, but I do kind of think that in a really, really weird and dark way, the basketball gods are sending a bit of a reminder of like, nope, there's a lot of work that y'all got to do this upcoming offseason. Yeah. And in a way, like, it's a bit of a positive that the series is playing out the way that it did. And in like a super weird, dark,
no, I agree with
the
you.
Bus runs me over way.
Yeah, I'm in a weird way. Here's another dark. I really want the Lakers to advance because I'm hoping that, you know, Luka comes back and Austin plays. Yeah. But I'm also hoping because that way people can see what the gap between the Lakers and the Thunder really is. Because in my opinion, you know, this is definitely like summer talk, but we're like half a rotation short. We're missing two wings, a big and a backup guard. And I think some people, like you said, you start to talk yourself into it and you're like, no, we're right there. I'm like, we are not right there. We're, you know, they're doing a great job of fighting hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like when you're understaffed at a restaurant, we're doing the best we can, but we're not exactly like, you know, this is not a Michelin star restaurant. We're just trying to make sure the food doesn't get sent back. It's like the goal here, you know, they're a little mad, but they still tipped, you know, like, okay, that's fine. We're going to keep on going. You know, we're going to get better, but this is where we're at. And yeah, there is work to be done. This isn't a, you know, we'll get there when we get there. This is not a run it back.
We're that restaurant that like changes their font, right? Yeah. They change their font and it makes it look like they start calling themselves like a craft dining experience when it's like, what the fuck are you? Are just a Fridays. Like,
yeah. Like, wait, what is crap? Yeah. You know, like we changed our name.
You had all you need apps last week.
Yes, our name on Uber Eats is a little different. It's like wings and things, and you're like, that's not a place, right? Like, I think they just
what's the end things? Yeah.
Yeah. So the teams, and hopefully, of course, we want them to advance, get to the next round, you know, get as far as you can. Let's do this thing. Hopefully Luka can come back. Hopefully Austin starts to look like himself and feels good. But either way, you know, I think there's it's showing some flaws, right? Guess what? Luke Kennard cannot be that level of a player when everyone really cares. Again, the playoffs, we talk about this all the time, right? The regular season, no one cares, blah, blah, blah. This is what it looks like. Think about who's playing well and who's playing poorly. That kind of tells you what happens when the rubber meets the road. And in these playoff series, it's really hard to find players you can truly depend on, Anthony, that you know for a fact will play up to par. You know, unfortunately, we're seeing Jake's not really that guy. We're seeing, unfortunately, Luke a little spotty. Right. Jackson, again, he went away, like he disappeared. Right. What happened to that physicality? Not making those dumb mistakes. I think, let me pull up his stat line. I know it was rough. He had like 3 fouls, no points, like 2 rebounds and a turnover. And he was a -8. Like that's not. Yeah. 10 minutes, 0 points, 1 assist, 1 turnover, 2 fouls, -8. Like that's not going to cut it. Right. And we know this about Hayes. That's why Ayton's here. But guess what? You still need a backup big because if something happens to Ayton, you're back where you started, right? There's no option. So it's kind of also opening up the eyes on like what's needed because of what's lacking.
Yeah, that's basically like where I kind of hit on it last night, and I didn't want to dive too deep into it because that is a summer conversation, and there's still a win away before we are 4 losses away from having that summer conversation. But like I think though that like with the way that this roster is kind of put together, the margin for error is so small, right? We talked earlier in the show about like the variance and the gap between ceiling and floor with this team, and somehow, some way this summer, they have to figure out, you know, some way to build out this roster that doesn't have such a wide gap between when they're playing well, when they're playing smart, and when they aren't, you know? And because oftentimes in the playoffs, you're defined by who you are when you don't necessarily all have all pistons firing at the same time, you know? Just look at the literal Pistons right now, right? Like, they are on the verge. They have been pushed to the verge of elimination here because, you know, the way that they play in the regular season doesn't quite translate to the playoffs where everybody's playing as hard as they do in the regular season. So, I don't want to learn this lesson by way of a historic loss.
Let's learn it.
Give me four more playoff games that I get to do.
Who knows? You know, you never know what happens. Like that's the same thing. People are like, "Oh, do you even why?" I've seen the opposite too. Why even play? You know, you're gonna lose to the Thunder. I'm like, one, we don't literally know that, and two, you know, I'm not wishing any ill on anybody, but you never know what's gonna happen. Something odd can happen. Someone can get out, suspended, whatever. You know, give yourself a chance, and then also see it. Like we can really see the gaps, I think, certain things, but I don't know. And the way we can find out is by having them play. But we're not going to get there if they don't take care of business this weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see how it goes tomorrow night and then Sunday. Edwin, this has been an absolute blast, man. I need to, every time I have you on, I walk away from it saying, shit, I need to have this guy on more often.
I appreciate that. I love being on. It's been fun.
Yeah, anything that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
No, just go on silverscreenandroll.com and pretty much all my writings there. I'm doing also W stuff for Silverscreen and also Switch Appeal. So again, WNBA will be kicking off. I know, you know, right now we're in the middle of the NBA season, but that'll be kicking off and that'll be fun. So yeah, just support my work there. You can follow me, ecreates88. That's my handle everywhere. Twitter, Blue Sky, TikTok, all the good stuff. And you know, let's hope that the Lakers can give us some more opportunities so that we can keep on doing this. Because I don't want to – I already have the mock draft stuff ready, but I really don't want to start looking at, you know, the bigs from Illinois. Like, I don't make me do it. I don't want to do it.
Dude, I was just like – I was literally in the shower today thinking, like, fuck, man, I don't want to do season reviews already. Like, I don't want to
– Can you imagine me? If they lose on Friday, Saturday morning, I have to have exit interview questions ready. Like, that's an awful thing to think about. Let's not do this.
Oh, well, lately, though, they've been doing their exit interviews Friday night.
I think they would do it after the game, like directly after. I think LeBron will just be like, I don't know if I'm coming back. And then be like, that Sunday. Like, I don't want to have to deal with that. And then Pelinka using whatever Bible quote to let me know it wasn't actually that bad, you know? You think he already has it ready? He's like, okay, just in case. Like, you know, Romans 3:15.
Yeah, he's like, you know, really, when you lose four playoff games in a row, it's like wandering in the desert for 40 years. And, you know, 40. Yeah. No, but this has been fun. The Lakers play tomorrow night. And I'm going to talk to Raj about whether or not he wants to do a recap game from that. So depending on how that goes, we'll see. If in all likelihood I will be here, we'll just see about Raj, but please do check out Edwin's work there at Silver Screen Roll. He's hustling. You know, Windhorst said a lot of nice things about Raj. I think a lot of those same things can be said about Edwin, and I'm pulling for a fellow Latino there in the LA area to keep on keeping on. So have a great rest of your days, everybody. Make somebody else's woosah. Do some yoga, do some stretching, smoke some weed, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.